Tonight, the five stages of grief in a bear market. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. Steve, I think this might be probably one of the most important things that we can talk about right now. We can dissect the headlines, we can throw the statistics out, we can tell you what history shows. But time and time again, there are two huge factors when it comes to your money, right? One is how you invest in your plan, but the second is the behavioral finance component of it, right? How you are responding. And I think we would all like to say, I deal with my money in a vacuum, but we just know better than that. It is not the case. And what we're seeing right now is people responding to us kind of teetering on this bear market the way that you would maybe grieve a loved one.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard this concept applied to money, I thought to myself, this is pretty goofy.
Right.
But when you really think about it, there is no question that the five stages of grief apply to people and how they deal with finances and with Wall Street and with the market going up and down. One of the old adages, Amy, is the two biggest reasons for losses are fear and greed. Fear because you do something out of the emotion of the moment. You're fearful that you're going to lose more money. Greed of, this stock is up, it's double, it's triple, but it's going to keep going. I'd be a fool for selling, and eventually it does go down, and you don't make that money. I really think the five stages of grief are at least as strong of an influence on the average investor because we're people, we're human, we have emotions. And you can't just be a robot and say, oh, this volatility doesn't affect me. I don't even look at my statements. And what happens, que sera, sera.
The first stage is denial, right? And I think that's probably where maybe a lot of you find yourself right now. And this is where you're strictly looking at it, if you're, I think, a healthy, smart, long-term investor, as this is a buying opportunity, right? The market is down. Stocks are on sale. Buy the dips. I've been, trained to do this. And I think that's healthy. But I think what happens after you kind of, if you have money on the sidelines and you buy the dips, is like you kind of feel like, okay, I'm done. Market go back up, right? Like, bought the dip. Let's head
Nailed
the other direction.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Great. And I get that. I get that. I mean, I remember during the pandemic, right, throwing some money in when we were going down and then being like, okay, done. But like, it wasn't done. It was going, down for another month, several more weeks. And it was like, oh, this is really starting to get painful. And listen, you and I talk about this all day, every day. We research it. It is what we do. And we still, I think, on some level also experience some of these emotions. But first is denial because it is a buying opportunity. And then once you've bought, you just know the market's going to rebound.
Yeah. And back in January and February, the market threw a big old head fake is the way I look at it, because, we were looking for a correction. We were expecting a correction. And sure enough, stock market indexes were down about 12-13%. Well, not a full correction, but, pretty hefty. And wow, we got off light this time. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, this easily can be a fool's rally and we can see an even deeper dive. But it looks pretty. I was in total denial. I had a little bit of extra money sitting
We're
on the sidelines.
Clear. Yeah.
Earning, 0.1%, if that, at the bank. And sure, let's buy the dip. And boom, here we are. We go through a real healthy correction bordering a bear market. And that leads us to the next stage, which is anger. And this is usually where I hear from people. that's where you hear things like, I lost so much money last month. If this keeps up, I'm out of money in 5 years, 2 years, 10 years, whatever the number is. And people are angry that, wait a second, this can't happen to me. We shouldn't have a big loss. What's going on here? What are you doing about it? What do we need to do about it? And the answer is usually nothing is also a good decision. You never want to let your emotions take over, but anger is a legitimate phase of grief, and it absolutely affects your investment decisions.
You start to feel like the market is doing this to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like personally attacking you. And I think that's a very kind of common way to feel about it, right? This is unfair. Enough is enough. I've saved and I've saved. And this is where I would say, hey, this is absolutely a normal part of the cycle. And maybe this is where you pull out the charts, right? Google the charts. Yeah. Look at the S&P 500, how it's done historically. You know, just give yourself, do a little research, but give yourself just a little bit of, just, you know, a positive kind of way to be looking about this rather than being so negative. Because yeah, I think the anger is really quite normal. I remember 07, 08 opening the statement and being like, you're kidding me. We're never, ever, ever going to be able to retire. We stuck it out. Right. And I remember my knee-jerk reaction was like, enough. Like I wanted to pull into the fetal position, take out what we could salvage at that point. Thank goodness we didn't, right?
I mean, if you were one of those people that went to cash right, during that period of time, you really killed yourself, because people that just stuck it out during 08 and 09, if they didn't make any major changes, they were fine within a year and a half, 2 years or thereabouts. Yeah, this is the stage where you really feel like, I got to do something. I'm angry. I've got to do something. I've got to make a change. This is the stage when people are usually at their highest inclination to, in my terms, smart people doing stupid financial things. That's become my job title during the anger stage. It is not investment advisor, financial planner. It's to keep smart people from doing stupid financial things.
And I'm sure that's what you're doing now, right? More often than you would have, of course, been doing last year when it felt like nobody could do any wrong whatsoever in the stock market. You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55 KRC as we talk about the fact we are teetering on the verge of a bear market and the five stages of grief that you, if you're not experiencing them yet, we would say, you likely will be, at least maybe the next time you open your 401k statement. You start with denial, right? I'll buy the dip. It's going to get better soon. And then all of a sudden it's not, and it feels like anger, right? The market is attacking you. How could this be happening to you? And then you move to the next stage, which is bargaining.
Yeah.
This is where we are now. What changes do I need to make in order to get through this, right? You're changing your budget. Yeah. You're changing your spending. If you are someone who is close to retirement, you might be going to talk to HR to see if you could push back that retirement date, right? Mm-hmm. This is that stage.
Yeah, okay, and let's cut back on our cable bill. Wait a second, I'm paying how much, $240 a month? Okay, let's get serious now. I'll cut that down to $220 a month.
Right. You know,
this is where people are trying to cut the fat. Let's give up that that expensive vacation. We'll go to Gatlinburg instead of Paris. It's almost the same. But this is bargaining. This is cutting the fat from your budget. And maybe if I just do that, things will be better. And if I don't spend quite as much, maybe everything will be all right. And I can put back my rose-colored glasses back on. And it'll just be a bad dream. And unfortunately, it doesn't always rebound. And that's when depression falls in line. I mean, that's if the markets continue to slide, at some point you just say, all right, I'm out. There's no more fat I can cut or want to cut. I'm out. And maybe I do have to work a little bit longer. Maybe we're not going to go on that round the world trip. And you know what? At this pace, I just hope I have enough money to write a check for my funeral. I mean, depression really sets in.
If you're retired, maybe you start talking about going back to work, right? It is almost like this, it's never going to get better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's so easy to respond to something like this on a very emotional level. And that's why I love, like, the clients that we work with at Allworth, we run their plans a couple of different ways. And I think if you can think about, we run it, okay, current circumstances, right? During the best of times, whatever the current market circumstances are. But then we look at 07, 08, right? During that recession, in the worst of times, could your financial plan, right? Could what you saved, everything you put together, get you through retirement during those times? And it's amazing, right? How many people actually are able. So I think sometimes we put ourselves through these stages of grief and we don't need to. We need facts. We need to run the plan in the worst of circumstances. And there's a lot of people who come out and they are fine. They don't need to push back retirement. They don't need to go back to work. But they are staying up at night because they just haven't run the numbers.
This is one reason I don't get real worked up during periods like we're experiencing right now with client meetings. I think some people walk in kind of surprised by that, Amy. But when you run financial plans year after year after year, and I hope most CFPs, most financial planners run a bad timing scenario, which is basically a second scenario of instead of just expecting things to go normally from this point, what happens if... I'm starting to call it what if Steve is wrong scenario. What if this dip is just the beginning of another 2008, 2009. I've been running that scenario for years with people. And if it's worked out for the past 10 years, I know it's going to work out fine now. I know it's going to work out fine 5 years from now. And so I don't get upset because really your concern as an investor is, am I okay? Am I going to run out of money? And you know, the details of how your money is invested, yeah, you want it to be reasonably invested, get reasonable returns, minimal volatility. But the bottom line is you care about running out of money. Can I still afford to live my life the way I want to in retirement? And when you run a bad timing scenario, which in these days with the market down as much as it is, with bonds down as much as they are, if this is just the beginning and we're just entering an 08 and 09 and the financial plan works just fine. And Andy, what are you worried about? I mean, that's really my point. What are you worried about if your plan shows that you're okay? Really, at that point, you should walk out and say, well, let's do what we planned on doing. Let's take that trip and just not worry about normal market volatility that has you really wrapped up right now. And that's when you're at acceptance. Acceptance is when you throw in the towel, you just surrender to the bear market. I call this capitulation. And we may be close to that point with the market right now, but that's where you just say, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to live my day. The birds are chirping. I'm going to enjoy it. And usually that's about the bottom of the market.
I think there are two types of people, though, that end up in this acceptance stage. One are what you're talking about, right? Like, it kind of is what it is. I'm there, right? I've just kind of stopped checking my 401k because I'm not going to cash out right now. I'm still years away from retirement, so I'm not going to do anything. I just don't want to know. I don't want to expose myself to that stress. That's where I am with acceptance. There are some, though, that kind of have this unhealthy acceptance of, it is what it is. This money is lost. It's never coming back. The markets will never rebound. And I know these people, and you're putting yourself through a lot of stress that you just don't need to, because history has just shown us time and time again, right? Andy Stout, our chief investment officer, was just throwing out a statistic yesterday about, I think there's been 15 times, I think, that we have seen, pullbacks like this since 1945. And each time, 3 years later, markets have rebounded like 45%, right? So we put ourselves through the cycle. We put ourselves through the stress. And, you know, Stephen, you and I talk about it, and I would like to say I'm above it. And I just found myself the other day thinking, I need to sit down and, like, look at everything that we're spending and where can I? And I think I saw that our phone provider has Hulu for free and we're paying for Hulu. Yes, do those things as a normal course to save money, but also don't do it as a knee-jerk reaction because you're driving yourself crazy because you're so stressed out about losing money at the same time we've got inflation and everything else going on.
And don't look in the mirror and start saying, welcome to Walmart. Welcome to Walmart.
We're not there yet. Here's a Simply Money point. The emotions you feel during tough times also apply to your financial life. And hey, that's okay. It's important just to understand that. Acceptance can lead to decisions you probably won't regret. All right, it's one of the best times to ramp up saving for retirement. So hey, if you're an empty nester, why aren't you doing that? We'll explore that next. You're listening to Simply Money here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella, talking.
You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. Can't listen to Simply Money every night? Subscribe to our weekly podcast. It's the best of Simply Money. You'll find it on the IR app or wherever you get your podcasts. Straight ahead at 6:43, why you can expect to pay more for medical care in retirement and what you can start doing about it now to plan ahead. Oh, Steve, I know you're a huge baseball fan, and the Reds are near and dear to our hearts. This is a tough year to be a Reds fan, and it is showing up in the fact that no one is showing up.
Well, I'm going through the five stages of grief with the Reds, never mind my money.
Exactly.
I mean, I was so
Are you in acceptance? Are you in depression?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, if you're a Reds fan, at some point you're going to be in acceptance.
It's just acceptance.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's so frustrating because they had such a good core of a team last year and they blew it up. But I digress. This is not sports talk. So but it is playing out. You know, we talk about money. This show is called Simply Money. And right now the Reds are ranked 24th out of 30 teams in home attendance. People are just not going to Reds games like they used to. And it's not just the Reds. They're only averaging a little under 17,000 fans through their first 14 games. That's down 9% from last year, yet MLB attendance overall is up 34%. So it's not everybody going through this. It's the Reds and a couple other clubs.
Well, just remember, though, this time last year, right, so many ballparks were still shut down or there was, like, limited attendance. And so that's kind of bearing out in those numbers. But I think here is where you'll find your best perspective on this. The Reds are on pace for their worst attendance season since 1984.
Yeah, that's
right?
Rough.
It is Steve Sprovac alone in the stands. That is where we are.
With the paper bag.
In 1984, that team went 70 and 92, which actually is not sounding so bad right now.
We might have to overachieve to hit those numbers.
Oh,
this
my
year.
Goodness.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the old joke. I left my car with two Reds tickets on the dashboard. I went into the store and I thought, oh, I left those right out in the open. I raced back out and there were four tickets when I got back to the car.
Here you go. Exactly. I don't want mine either. Absolutely.
I want them to do well, Amy. I really, really
do.
We all
do, Steve.
I know. It's just, it's not just injuries. But they're going through a rough patch. They're going through a rebuild. And I wonder, have a lot of fans just said, nah, this is one more rebuild than I'm willing to do? I gave up my Bengal season tickets about 25 years ago because basically for the same reason. I just didn't see anything happen. And it's great that they're coming back now.
So maybe 25 years there will be hope for the Reds.
I'm not sure what the Reds are doing.
I hope so. You know, I talk to people all the time who are just super open, I think, because of what I do, right? They talk to me more about money than maybe they would to normal, you know, other people. And they'll say, like, I'm going to start. I know it's so important to save for retirement, but I'm going to start after my child finishes this sport. It's super expensive. Or after we take this trip or after blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of people who end up in the place where once the kids are out of the house, right?
Yeah,
I'm an empty nester, that's when I'm going to start saving for retirement. But the bad thing is, research shows it doesn't happen.
This is really disturbing. It really is. Because, you know, kids are marrying later, they're buying homes later, they're having kids later. And so, okay, maybe they're just saving a little bit later. And there's lots of incentives where you can save more money in your 401k and IRAs once you hit 50. There was a big study of over 20,000 people done by the panel study of income dynamics, and the bottom line is people are just not saving. They say they're going to, but the numbers are really, really low that people have saved up by the time they're in their 50s.
They're not saving. They're not prioritizing paying down mortgages or other debts. And what I see in this same research actually shows that a lot of people are cutting back on hours, right? Work hours at that time. So they're getting to the age where they can save more, right? Catch-up contributions kick in at age 50. They're not saving more. In fact, they're moving the opposite direction. They're not working as much. They're taking more leisure hours. And I know lots of people just anecdotally will say, well, the kids are finally out of the house. We're going to do that trip.
Yeah.
We're going to build onto the back of the house so we can enjoy. Wait, we've earned this. And I'm thinking that's incredibly short-sighted because you've also earned a good retirement, but you got to be able to pay for it.
You do, and when you wait later in life to do all these things, and you and I both know college has gotten crazy
yes.
expensive. That okay, I kind of get that you don't have much money free to put towards it. But once the kids are out of college, people are taking trips. They're enjoying life, and that has made the average amount that the 45 to 54 year old has saved up to be only $250,000. That ain't going to cut it. Not in retirement, 10 years away.
Here's the Simply Money point. If you want to achieve your retirement goals, you've got to boost your saving once the kids are out of the house. It's a key component to doing that, as well as prioritizing paying down debt. There's a scam out there that could be targeting you or someone you know. If you are planning to move, we're going to talk about it next. You're listening to Simply Money here on 55KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner, along with Steve Sprovac. In this crazy hot real estate market that we've been seeing over the past few years, if you haven't moved, you're likely close to someone who has or who is going to. And that is why Josiel Ehrlich is joining us tonight, president and CEO of the Cincinnati Better Business Bureau, with a warning about moving scams. Josiel, you're telling me this is pretty prevalent right now?
Yes, it is. And May is National Moving Month. You know, May through August, kids are out of school. This is the prime time for movers. According to our BBB scam tracker, and we talk about that from time to time, consumers reported losing $730,000 to moving scams last year.
Wow.
Now, that might not sound like much, but that's a 216% increase over losses reported to BBB in 2020. So huge increase in that regard.
And what do these look like? Because every time I've moved, which has been several times, especially recently, I call the company or I look them up online. They call me back. We, talk about it. And that's sort of how this works. So how are they scamming people?
Well, moving can be expensive. So people are looking for low prices. Now, before we get into the scams, I want to get into some cautions just for people who are dealing with reputable movers. If you're planning on a move, some things that you should be aware of. First of all, get estimates from at least three different movers and make sure that those estimates are apples to apples comparisons, which means you've got to do your homework from the beginning. You need to sort out what's moving, what's staying, what I'm packing, what the movers are packing, so that you can get an apples-to-apples comparative quote. Now, you also need to be careful of the lowballers that I referred to earlier. Some rogue operators bait consumers with really low estimates, and then they deliver your belongings to you, and they also give you a bill with some unexpected additional fees that can be quite hefty. And they refuse to unload their truck unless you pay those fees.
Oh,
that's
gosh.
Part
okay.
of the scam.
Yeah.
And if you refuse to pay them at that particular moment, they're okay with that because they're going to put your stuff in storage, and that's just going to keep ticking up your bill even more. So the good news is if you're moving across state lines, you do have some protections there. Movers are required by law to deliver your goods for no more than 110% above the price of a non-binding estimate. And if you have a binding estimate, that's all you have to pay. Now, unfortunately, you don't have that same protection if you're moving within a state. Mm. Now, another thing you need to consider is insurance. What happens if an item is broken or lost in that move?
Which happens all the time.
It does happen. You know, we've moved. I haven't moved homes in a while, but we've moved offices, and I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Movers provide damage protection for your items at 60 cents per pound at no additional cost. This means that if something gets lost or damaged, you'll get 60 cents for every pound that item weighs. If that's a couch, that could be some money. But if it's an expensive vase, that's not much money at all.
Or an expensive piece of jewelry, or I guess you wouldn't maybe have them move those things, but there's a lot of things that don't weigh a lot that are high value.
In a move, who knows what you've decided to pack and just not even think it through. Yeah. That 60 cents per pound may be fine if you're moving furniture that's seen better days, but again, the valuable possessions may not be such a good idea. You may want to consider purchasing what's called full value protection, which covers the full replacement cost of the damaged item. But that can be costly, so you really need to weigh your options and figure out how you're going to handle all of that. Now, there's also a number of online sites, and this is another scam that comes into play, that connect you to movers, but you need to do your homework first. Not all of these third-party sites vet the companies that they list on their site. Mm. They'll claim that they're going to connect you with a member shipping company to get you a reasonable price, but some of these sites have a lot of scammers that are creeping around the periphery. They might have good movers on the site as well, but they might have scammers. Before you use one of these sites, you really need to read the fine print. You know, one of the sites that BBB is familiar with says they assume no control over the quality, safety, or legality of the transactions that take place on the site. They also state that registration with the site doesn't mean that they have any information whatsoever about a company on their site. And they assume no responsibility for claims made by movers regarding their licenses, insurance, registration. All of which is to say, that's a lot of red flags.
You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55KRC. We're joined by Josiel Ehrlich, our friend from the Better Business Bureau. She is CEO and president there with a warning about moving scams. National Moving Month in May. A lot of us are just kind of tis the season. Josiel, what I hear you saying is like maybe you just don't want to sit down at your computer and do kind of a random Google search on moving companies. You talk to friends, you get some referrals, you kind of have a starting point idea rather than just going down sort of the rabbit hole of what the internet comes up with for you.
Right. And read reviews, not just from one site, but from a variety of sites. Sometimes reviews can be faked. So that's why you want to go to a variety of sites. And always, always, always end your search checking out the company's BBB business profile at BBB.org to determine whether or not this is a company that you can trust.
All right. So you mentioned getting three different estimates and hopefully from referrals from people who you've heard from who've used these companies before. What about payment? Is there any issues with online payment? I know so many scams in the past that you've talked to ask us to send sort of, gift cards in advance, things like that. Obviously, those are red flags. But anything to think of as far as payment forms?
Yes. And especially in these third party sites where they're just putting you in touch with another company. If the company is requiring you to pay with gift cards or more commonly with a payment app like Venmo or Zelle, that should be a big red flag. Those companies, once you make that large deposit that they require of you through these payment apps, they stop communicating with you. They're done. They've got what they wanted. They've got your money. You don't have your money, and you have nobody that's going to move your belongings. So always, always pay with a credit card. That gives you the ability to challenge any unexpected charges that you might see. It gives you a great sense of security.
And just I want to quickly get to some other scams that you want to warn us about this month. Are these online scams?
Yes, tech scams. And we've talked about this before, but it's always worth repeating. And please share with family and friends who may not be as tech savvy as you, the listener, are. If somebody calls you or messages you unexpectedly claiming your computer security is at risk, it's a scam, period. Scammers are always pretending to be from Apple or Microsoft because people trust those names. And if you got a call from Apple or Microsoft, you're going to pay attention. That is just a ploy to get you to give your personal information or to pay money for tech support that you don't need to fix a problem that does not exist. Now, if you get a call from somebody saying they're from Apple or Microsoft and your problem is you've got a problem with your computer and you've got to fix it right now, just hang up. Again, it is a scam. No questions asked.
I think one of the best points you make, whether it's these tech scams, moving scams, whatever it is, whoever the company is that they claim that you're talking to or dealing with, go to the Better Business Bureau first, right? Before you give them any information, credit card information, sign any contracts, agree to anything, go to the Better Business Bureau and see if there are, bad reviews, bad ratings on those companies. Those are not companies that you want to do business with, right?
Absolutely. BBB.org, or you can call our office. We're happy to talk to you and answer any questions you might have. If you still think something is okay, call us first. If you've heard our warnings, please be very careful.
Be vigilant. Great warnings, as always, from Josiel Ehrlich, our friend from the Cincinnati Better Business Bureau, president and CEO there, with just the warnings, right? The scams that you need to be on the lookout for. Make sure your friends and family know about these, too. You're listening to Simply Money here on 55KRC, the talk station.
Give me some money.
You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Amy Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. Straight ahead, how to not get ripped off, yes, on funeral costs. You know, Steve, you work with so many investors, right, looking at retiring someday. And I think the number one thing that probably catches people off guard as you get close to retirement is how much healthcare costs are going to be. I mean, do you find people come in and are prepared for this, or do the real numbers kind of shock them?
You know, the number one question, number one concern of everybody that retires prior to age 65 is, how expensive is healthcare going to cost me? I mean, they're expecting health insurance, you know, to be a lot of money, and it is. You know, it's not unusual to spend $1,000 to $1,200 for a basic health insurance plan until you get on to Medicare. What I don't see, though, is adding up the total cost, because even when you get on Medicare, Amy, you and I both know it doesn't cover everything. I mean, there are a lot of costs, copays and a lot of things that aren't covered by Medicare. You kind of have to buy a Medigap policy to cover some of those costs. That costs money, and these costs are going up dramatically.
Yeah, dramatically, to the tune of about $315,000 for the average couple in retirement. However, right, that's the reality of what you will have to pay out of pocket. But Fidelity, and I love that they did this research, they actually asked Americans, what do you think? How much do you think you're going to pay for healthcare in retirement? And
did they miss it?
Get that one right. $41,000. So that's a $274,000 shortfall from the estimate. If this is you, right, and you're a little nauseous right now, this is your wake-up call that you have to be planning for this. You know, even when inflation is normal, Steve, I mean, we're at 8%+ right now, but even when it was below 2%, healthcare costs far outpace inflation year over year, 5%, 6%, honestly, to the point where it's kind of become normal to expect that.
Yeah, and pretty much everybody that's on Social Security, it's drawing a benefit. You know, they love talking about, did you hear about the big raise I got this year? It went up 6%, but Medicare premiums went up 7%. What the government giveth, the government taketh away. So, okay, you got a little bit more money, but now you're paying more for your Medicare premium. And you know, if the inflation rate that you and I run into when we fill up our tanks or you know, go to Kroger or whatever, that's one inflation rate. Guess what? Healthcare inflation is pretty much double that. And you know, when I do a financial plan for somebody, I'm going to use, you know, a more realistic rate for healthcare inflation. And it's pretty much double the rate that I use on other expenses. It doesn't take too many years before, you know, that health expense to double and triple over the course of the rest of your life. And you've got to account for it. And yeah, $315,000 is a lot of money, more than a lot of people even have in their 401k, but that's the number.
You're listening to Simply Money tonight here on 55KRC, the wake-up call on how much you can expect to pay for healthcare costs in retirement and what you can do about it. Plan. You've got the number now, right? Plan for it. I know someone, a good friend, who was a financial advisor all of his life. And even when he got to the age of retiring, to 65, and the numbers were right in front of him of how much he was going to have to pay out of pocket for him and his wife for Medicare, was eye-opening. I mean, you know, it even shocked him. So plan for that. And, you know, I'm a huge proponent of the HSA, the health savings account.
I knew you were going to get there.
I knew you guys were tired of hearing me say about it. I actually was like posting about it on Facebook the other day. And I had a friend who posted from high school. I haven't seen him forever. And she was like, yes, triple tax advantage. It's free money from the government. I'm like, oh, someone else gets it. If a high deductible plan makes sense for you, you will never pay taxes on this money if you take it out for qualified healthcare expenses in retirement. And if you have an emergency fund built up where you can actually pay healthcare costs out of pocket as they come, you can invest that money in the HSA. It's got time to grow, right? To cover healthcare costs in retirement. It is one of my favorite tools that you can use to plan for retirement. And Steve, I also remember My grandpa retired from Milacron, and, yeah. you know, obviously had a pension, but healthcare costs were covered
yeah.
in retirement.
Used to be common.
Not so much anymore.
Well, yeah, in the late 80s, IRS, you know, always everybody's favorite. Congress and the IRS decided, you know what, those retiree health benefits, that, you know, $300 a month we're going to charge them instead of the $1,000 it would cost them if they went out and bought the policy on their own, you're going to have to put that on your company's balance sheet as a liability. This is a big deal because it makes your company financially look weaker, and almost overnight, retiree health benefits for most companies went out the window. Okay, so if your company doesn't pay retiree health benefit, you could always go on COBRA, right? I mean, that's where you pick up, you have the same health insurance. Why not just keep doing that? Because at most companies, you're paying 5 to 10% of the premium. And when HR comes back and says, okay, here's what you're going to pay, now you pay 100%. And you're only allowed to do that for 18 months after
yes.
you leave the company. People are shocked. Wait a second, I was paying $35-$50 a month for my health insurance. You're telling me it's going to cost me $400 a month now? Guess what? Yep, that's, and you're getting off light if it's only $400 a month.
Here's the Simply Money point. Healthcare costs after you retire are unavoidable, so plan now so your financial health can work in tandem with your physical needs. Next, the do's and don'ts of, yes, planning ahead, shopping for a funeral. You're listening to Simply Money here on 55KRC, the talk station. You're listening to Simply Money. I'm Mimi Wagner along with Steve Sprovac. You know, it is one of the hardest things to do, right? You lost a loved one and you have to then figure out the funeral arrangements. And I know, Steve, when my mom passed away 12 years ago, we had not pre-planned. I talked to her a couple times, had kind of a general idea of what she really wanted. But, you know, it's so emotional. And, you know, it's like they're telling you price tags on things and you're numb and you're like, what's the nicest thing? She needs the nicest thing. What's the yeah. nicest thing? Really, yeah. my mom could have cared less about any of that. And we probably spent double on that funeral that we needed to put. But in that place, right, where there is money, where there is emotion and grief, there are always scammers.
Well, yeah. And this is not when you make your best decisions. You're mourning the loss of someone close to you if you're the one doing the shopping. And, you know, it's expensive anyway. You know, funerals are not, they're not real cost effective. But when you've got the emotional side of it to contend with, you in a lot of cases you're equating, well, you know, this she meant the world to me. I'm going to do the best and I'm going to buy the best casket and I'm going to have the best service. And you know, a typical funeral is $9,400. I think that's lowball. I think you can easily spend closer to $20,000. And you know, the question is, are you getting your money's worth? Are you getting your value?
Well, and of course, this digital age has made it easier to reach right people who are grieving. So just last month, the feds charged the operator of two online cremation brokerages to misleading clients and withholding remains to force those families to pay inflated prices. There are just people out there looking, and this is horrid, to take advantage of someone in any stage of things, and especially just grief makes it so much easier. So, you know, understanding just kind of how these things run, right? Cremation is usually easier or cheaper, I'm sorry, than burial. You know what, Steve, though? I recently learned, and I did not know this, Costco actually has caskets.
Is that right? Do you have to buy like a dozen?
And funeral flowers and urns. Yes, you don't have to buy a dozen. But as crazy as it sounds, right, there are just ways to save. You have to take a little time. You might have to do a little research, call around, call a couple of different places. And I know you're not kind of in that mindset during that time when you're grieving someone, but ultimately the difference could mean thousands of dollars.
Yeah. And I, you know, dealing with retirees and, you know, as they get up in age, it's kind of reassuring both for me to hear and for them to talk about, my wife and I, we went shopping and we've got everything arranged. The kids won't have to do anything. We told them where everything's going to be, plot's done, funeral's done, it's all paid for. You want to talk about a mind put at rest before they get sick, before they have to really get down to the wire with this. Plan ahead, get it done, and it saves the kids a whole lot of effort.
Yeah, when we talk about, right, scammers, if you have taken, right, the time to do this yourself, you're protecting your children from that and just so many other emotional things that can go on during this time. You've been listening to Simply Money here on 55KRC, the talk station.